A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and I am thrilled to welcome back on the podcast this week one of my all-time favorite guests, Nikki Glaser. Nikki and I had a great conversation on this show back in the summer of 2021. It was so memorable for her, apparently, that she ended up talking about it in her HBO special, Good Clean Filth, the following year. More on that later. Now, Nikki has a brand new special called Someday You'll Die, premiering on HBO this Saturday, May 11th. We spoke ahead of both that and her return to the comedy roast at this past weekend's Roast of Tom Brady at Netflix is a Joke Fest in LA, which I got to check out in person and was an absolute blast. As you're hearing this, I'm still in LA at the festival where tonight, Wednesday, May 8th, I'll be taping my live podcast interview with comedian Mae Martin. I honestly have no idea if there are still tickets available, but if you are in town and want to come see us live, there's a link in the description for this episode. Nikki and I went so deep in this conversation that we decided to skip the news segment with Allegra this week. So let's get right into it now. Here's me with Nikki Glaser. Well, I really want to talk about your new special, but I feel like we have to get something out of the way about your previous special, Good Clean Filth. Just the story from my perspective, I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but so I loved that special. I was watching it a couple years ago, minding my business, you know, watching the special. And then all of a sudden you're talking about the interview that you and I did the year before.
Oh my God.
That led to that headline that you did not like.
Oh, wait, what was the joke again? Will you remind me?
Yeah. So in the special, you talk about, you know, I did this interview and, you know, it was going well and everything, but then it came out and the headline said, Nikki Glaser would rather be fuckable than funny.
I was worried recently because I did an interview and the headline of the article came out and it said, Nikki Glaser values being fuckable more than being funny. And I thought, oh my God, people are going to come after me for this. I'm a bad feminist. Luckily, no one saw it because like a celebrity died that day. So it was like, yes, thank God for the opioid crisis. Like really came in clutch for me that day. But it isn't even what I said. Honestly, I was misquoted. I remember talking to the journalist and what I did say was I value being fuckable more than being funny, but like, please don't print that. Like, I'm serious. Like, people are going to be pissed, but like between you and me, like I do.
Well, no, you did not do anything wrong by writing that headline. That is literally what I said. I, you know, as a comedian, you have to throw people under the bus that don't deserve it because, you know, my boyfriend deals with this all the time. He's like, that's not what I said. I'm like, yeah, but it's not funny what you really said. Yes, this is so funny because I truly don't remember my jokes. Like, I flush them from my brain as soon as they're gone. So what was the...
first of all, I was very appreciative that the joke, the crux of the joke was that you admitting that, yes, you did say that. First you say like, I was totally misquoted. And then you're like, what I actually said was the same thing.
Yes. I reiterated it. Like, no, I prefer being fuckable to funny, but don't print that. Like it was something like that. Yeah. Like, that's so funny. And I did not say it was off the record. So it totally was. So I threw you under the bus journalistically there. I'm sorry that was you. I do remember, but thank you for that joke.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was very funny to be watching it and just have that happen all of a sudden.
That's great. Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was great. And I have to tell you, I felt personally attacked in your new special too, because you open with about 20 minutes about how having kids is the dumbest thing you can do. And I think since we last talked on this podcast, I've had two of them.
You know what? So it's not, as a dad, it's the smartest thing. I would absolutely sign up to be a dad. I think it's a very smart decision. I think it brings a lot of joy to your life. It's not as much work. And that's not me saying that you don't work. Like, that's just, it just isn't. Like, there's just an added stress along with being a mom that you just have to do more. I would need to do so much, I think, to really nail that role. And I just don't have it in me. So I don't think you made the bad decision. I think your wife did.
Okay. Well, I'll tell her that. she'll appreciate that.
No, I'm just, you know, I do have a lot of feelings about having kids. I have to take a side, you know, like I have to really prove my thesis, which is I don't need to have kids. So for me, this was an exploration of like, how do I really sell this to myself? Because if I'm being honest, of course I struggle with that decision. And I don't have that much time to decide. You know, when in my 20s, it just felt like I had such a long time before that was even like something that I would consider not being able to do anymore. And suddenly it's just knocking on my doorstep of like, being, you know, if I wanted to do it now, it would still be a struggle, but I could still do it. And so I think on this special, leading up to it, I was just really curious why my friends like decided to do it. Like, when is that going to happen for me? Cause I want to be normal. I want to do the thing that everyone seems to want to do. I feel left out. And so I asked a lot about why. And I just none of the answers were resonating with me. And I think that I just leaned in then to, okay, well, why don't I just really try to prove it to myself why I'm doing this and why it's the right decision. So I admit that it's just me preaching to my own choir and needing to say the things I want to say. But I do think there is some truth to it. I think that, you know, I didn't put it in the special so much, but I don't think I put this in, but I used to have one of the things being like, you know, why are there some women that just like want kids and like that's obviously such an easy decision for them, and people like me, like what's the difference between me and them? And the difference is that my life has purpose, and that was too hard to say. I can make it work because it isn't. It's like saying my life has more purpose than yours. The thing is, it doesn't anymore. If you had kids, your life has way more purpose than mine ever will. But because my life is so, I get so much attention. I'm doing things that raise my adrenaline all the time and make me feel important and make me feel seen. And these are things like doing podcasts or like going on Kelly Clarkson, like, you know, performing at the Comedy Store every night. That fills me up in a way that I don't. I don't have that moment of like, what am I here for? I kind of know. And it's not like my reason for being is like, I can talk about my vagina with Conan O'Brien. Like, it's not like virtuous or anything, but it does. That is, I think, the reason. Like, it reminds me of the Taylor Swift lyric, like, I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday every day. Like, my birthday is every day. I don't feel the need to get married because I don't need a day where I'm like, everyone watches me and I get to be dressed up. It's every day. So it makes sense why I haven't had this kind of moment of, what am I doing with my life? How could I make this more meaningful? And I will eventually, but it'll be when my parents die and I'll go, oh no, I don't have family. What? And then it'll be too late. And then I'll have to watch my special and remind myself of why I didn't do it in the first place.
I think it's just, I look at being a mom and I think it's too hard to be a mom for me. It's not hard to be a mom. It's hard to be a good mom. It's easy to be a bad mom. That's so easy. But to be a good mom is hard. To be a bad mom, that's as easy as being a great dad. That's what that is. Yeah. It's a cakewalk. You know it.
That kind of goes along with the overall theme of your special. It's called Someday You'll Die. I would say it's the darkest premise that you've put out there so far. Does that reflect your state of mind right now? Because the way you're talking, you seem very like everything is going well. But
there's a lot caffeine.
Yeah,
I think it's that.
Just depends on what time
it really does. I struggle with self-esteem and depression in a really, it's not easy. It's bad for me. I'm cyclically going through really intense self-doubt and imposter syndrome and immense depression and just defeat. And it seems to get worse the more successful I get. And it's something that I'm constantly trying to figure out and find a cure for, because I can't really keep going like this, because things will be good and I'll be confident and feel like, oh, you know what? I don't need more. And this is enough. And I am talented and I didn't trick anyone. And then it's gone by the next day. It's just neither feeling lasts forever. I'm so glad the feeling of the depression doesn't ever last. And that's what kind of gets me through it, is knowing that it will lift at some point. But the good times don't last ever either. And so I think I just really have become very comfortable, I guess, from my podcast and doing other podcasts and the response I've gotten from talking about depression in ways that I haven't before, and really being realistic about my thoughts of suicide and my kind of fantasies of it, that I just, I'm not ashamed of it anymore. Like, I kind of think it's, I don't think I'm weird for thinking it. I've let myself off the hook for those feelings. So I think that this, somewhere in the past couple of years, I've just said like, okay, you can just start talking about the thing that you were scared to talk about or ever reveal, which is despite all your success, despite how great things are going in your life, you still think about dying a lot and you wish to die a lot of times and you say really dark things and there's some freedom in just like saying that stuff out loud. And, you know, I'm like, I make the joke about it. Like, I talked about it on Joe Rogan and I realize I'm not alone because so many people want me to kill myself. But it was true. Like, talking about it publicly for the first time, my suicidal thoughts, that was a huge moment for me of like, I knew other people had them, but I didn't know that this kind of depression I have where I get those thoughts is quite common. And it doesn't mean that I have to do it. And honestly, I feel like I have some control over it when I talk about it so much. And if I can laugh about it, it takes some of the just, it's so grim. It takes some of that away and I can own it a little bit more and control it more, I guess.
Yeah. The joke is that people, you went on Rogan, talked about your suicidal thoughts and then people told you to kill yourself. But what, there was some reaction from his listeners that was not so so negative. Some people who relating
to as
well.
No. That's a joke. The joke was, I mean, it's really based on the truth, which was so many people reach out to me and were like, I have those feelings too. I struggle with that as well. I have suicidal thoughts. And I felt like so comforted by other people's, you know, depression, but I really was. And so that joke was just made out of the fact that the real part of it was that I did get so much outrage, but I thought it would be funny to, you know, you think of Joe Rogan fans, you think they're probably trolling women and you're not funny and kill yourself, which I have gotten that, not even just from Joe Rogan fans, but it just fit perfectly for that joke. I have to probably get ahead of it and call him and say, that's just a joke. Please don't hate me. But yeah, I really did get such a response and I just thought it would make me such a liability to say I'm going to kill myself or like, I think have things of thoughts of suicide or something like to the industry. Like, we're not going to want to work with this girl, but they don't care about if you kill it. It'll make their project go better if you kill yourself. Like, the people in this industry don't fucking care about your mental health. It's not made me a liability at all. It's made me more relatable, I think, to people. I just know so many people have these thoughts. It's just like one of those breakthroughs in comedy where you're like, I thought it was just me. And that's my latest one that happened nearly at 40, 20 years into comedy. Like, I'm still finding things that I thought I was just the only one, and I'm not.
There's this idea that you bring up in the special about, you know, sort of who's allowed to say what. And you talk about the idea of caveating jokes based on your own experience, you know, to avoid getting canceled or whatever. So you say that, you know, you're allowed to talk about suicide because you're going to do it someday.
Yeah.
And that people, you know, say like, well, I have a, you know, my second
brother.
Cousin once removed is trans, so I can say whatever I want, you know, that kind of stuff. How did you, you know, when did you start thinking about that and sort of wanting to talk about that aspect of it? Because there's sort of like a meta quality to that part of the special where you're commenting on even what some other comedians, you know, try to get away with and succeed or not.
I hate that. I mean, I think it's probably going to look like I'm calling out comics and being like, come on, like, why are you doing it? You're just using your family member, throwing them under like the short bus of being like, I can tell these jokes because I have someone who's special needs. And comedians do that. And I think honestly that those comedians do have a very interesting personal take that they should share. It shouldn't mean that they don't have a take, but I don't like when comedians are told you can't have a take unless you have someone that you're not allowed to have rape jokes unless you've been raped. Somehow that makes it okay. Well, I could be raped. Like, I have thoughts about rape and I have thoughts about the R word and whether or not it should come back and my thoughts about that word. And I'm terrified to ever say that word actually on stage, even though I do believe it's making a comeback and it will be back soon. I'm still scared to say it, but I feel like I probably could say it if I had someone in my family. And I just don't think it's fair to say that some people can say it and some people can't, just because, I mean, I have affection for people have Down syndrome, but just because I don't have a brother that is, I can't say it. That doesn't mean that I think that comedians that have a brother shouldn't be able to say it. I don't think they're scapegoating or whatever. I just think we all should be able to talk about any subject. Tim Dillon is a favorite comedian of mine, and he recently had this thought that I've trying to been saying for a while, but he kind of really said it perfectly. It's like, we're comics. Like, we're not supposed to get things right. Like, don't look to us for like, she had the wrong take. Of course I did. I'm an idiot. I have an undergrad degree in English from University of Kansas. I never read a single book in that experience. I'm not that smart. I just found out that Mexico is not in South America. Like, I'm not that intelligent. I'm just someone who's telling jokes. So I should have wrong takes and I shouldn't be canceled because I said something out of line that I don't have personal experience with. Yeah, whatever. I should have a bad take. It shouldn't stop you from being able to talk about what you want. And I think that was just a reaction to me being like, just let me talk about what I want, and finding the irony in the fact that I could only do rape jokes if I've been raped. Like, somehow the audience would be soothed by the fact that I was raped. Yeah, was funny to me.
That's pretty fucked up. Do you find yourself censoring yourself, not saying things? Like you said, you're kind of scared to say the R word on stage. Do you think of things and go, but you know what? I can't say that because X, Y, and Z might happen.
Yes and no. I mean, I really don't like to hurt people's feelings. So if there was someone that, like, if I said the R word and there was someone that had, like, suffered because of that word or felt called out or alienated by it, I really would feel horrible. But, you know, these are the subjects. When you first start tackling a subject like that and you're figuring out the wording still and making it palatable, that's where you have people getting offended and worrying about getting canceled. And I was just told today in an interview that I'm definitely going to get canceled. This guy was just like, it's a matter of time before something resurfaces. And as much as that really made me go like, what have you seen? What did I say? I just know that I'm not a hateful person and that I don't like making people feel bad about themselves or sad. And so if I do eventually get canceled, I just know that I think I'll be able to forgive myself. I don't know if anyone else will. So I just know that in my heart, I guess. But yeah, I do watch what I say a lot. And I'm getting ready to do something where I might have a joke with the R word in it. And I'm very, very scared. It's like, that is like a defining moment.
Is this thing that you're preparing for a roast by any chance?
Yeah, I'm preparing for the roast of Tom Brady. Yes,
this is very exciting. This is part of the Netflix is a joke fest. It's kind of all been under wraps. But by the time people are hearing this, it will have aired live on Netflix.
And you'll see
another live show. Do and I not mean, think was, about after it's over.
That's a little scary to do this live. I've never done that before. And
because they do a lot of editing of those roasts in the past.
A ton. I don't know if you've been to them, but like,
yeah, they do. It's much longer to sit there.
They're way different in person. Like, people bomb. And like, when it airs, they don't bomb. Like, somehow they fix it.
And that's not going to happen this time.
No, you'll know. And I haven't bombed at a roast before. And like, I've been fortunate enough, I gotta
there's
find
always,
I just
there's
said
always,
that. Knock on
there's
wood.
Always,
Knock
there's
on
always
wood.
One person who bombs pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Experience. And some of the material I'm doing, like, I don't work in this. I don't really know this area of stuff. Like, I'm educating myself about football. I just learned about football from Taylor Swift. Like, and then now I'm doing all this research on Tom Brady, and I'm learning to love it and learning to, like, really respect him. I'm glad I'm at a point right now where I'm like, I am in awe of him. Like, I get it. And I really get it. Like, I'm excited to meet him. I'm excited to be on the same stage as him. I'm excited to talk about his career and everything. So I have a great angle, I feel. But it's terrifying. I haven't done a roast since pre-COVID. I thought it was behind me. I thought if they ever come asking again, I'm going to say no, because the last time I did one, I was 34. And if you called me old, it's like, it didn't really work. But now I'm 39 and it's like, that's old. Like, they can make those jokes now or make fun of my looks. And it's not like I've gotten any more secure in my looks. Like, it's painful to do a roast. So I'm kind of worried about that, but I'm in this state of mind right now ahead of it where I'm so focused on writing and I'm not even thinking about the jokes that could be written about me. And that's always really rough when you sit there and you go, oh, wait, I forgot I have to like hear about how ugly I am or like how unfunny
from Tom Brady.
Yes, from Tom Brady. So it's going to be rough, but I'm not thinking about that part of it yet.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely more famous now than you were last time. So maybe you won't get those as much.
Yeah, maybe. It's such, yeah, those don't bother me because I'm pretty aware of my level of fame. I don't care if people say I'm not famous. I don't really care about being famous. Like, I mean, yes, of course I care because it means more money, which means more security, which means I won't die in the apocalypse, which is my biggest fear. Like, I'll get in someone's bunker. I can get, you know, buy a ticket in there. But I don't care about, like, please come at me for that. I would love it.
Yeah, you would prefer that. I wonder, I remember the really, you know, there was famous things about like Trump saying you weren't allowed to talk about his, how much money he had. I wonder what will be off limits for Tom Brady. Is the kiss with the sun, has that come up at all?
Dude, it's like they have kind of said, don't go after the kids. And I was like, why would I go after his kid? Like, is there a kid story that I don't know about? And I, of course, remember the kiss, but that doesn't really seem to involve the kid. Like, it involves the kid, but it's not... an indictment of the kid.
That's a fine line. So I don't know if that's a...
Well, as someone who was kissed by their dad on the mouth my whole childhood and like into my adulthood until I had to put a stop to it, I feel like I can come at that joke from a place of empathy and like...
Again, and personal experience like we were talking about.
That's what you got to do. Like all of the jokes I'm writing, I'm like, okay, am I really going to call this person that thing? Like I'm finding this time I have more of a conscience about it. I have more empathy and I'm not coming from a place where I'll just say anything. I think I don't ever watch any clips of mine, but the other day I saw one and I was like, what the fuck? Who are you? Why would you ever say this to someone? I couldn't believe what I said to people. I really was shocked by it. And I understand finally like the response people give me about the roast, which is always like, I don't know how you do it. And I'm just like, I never really like, I don't know what was going on with me at these times, but I just said whatever I thought. I mean, you really have a license to say anything because if they're there and they sign up for it, you really can go after them. Now, Tom Brady, his kid involved or like jokes about Giselle, that's where I'm like, I don't want to frame Giselle in a poor light. I don't want to ever frame his kids. Like they're not on the dais. They haven't signed up for it. But anyone else, like I will not pull punches.
Tom also lost $30 million in crypto. Tom, how did you fall for that? I mean, even Gronk was like, me know that not real money. Like...
That's where I think I have the superpower for me to be able to say things is that I just, mm-hmm. in my brain, I go, but it's a fact. I'm not making a moral judgment about people. And sometimes I am. Like, there are some people on this dais who I'm like, I have feelings about that I'm like, okay, I can write from like a real place of like, I don't like you. And then the others, I'm just like, okay, what's true about you? And let's just call that out. But I will say that I have a lot more heart going into this one than I have in the past of like, I don't want to be mean like that. Like it has to be really good to be that mean.
Coming up, Nikki talks about what it was like to roast political figures like Ted Cruz and Marjorie Taylor Greene when she guest hosted Jimmy Kimmel Live, and later how we're both feeling about turning 40 this year.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to our previous episode with Nikki Glaser to hear the quotes that ended up making it into her previous special, along with everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Wednesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple and Spotify to let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Nikki Glaser. It's been a while since you've done a roast like this, but I did want to bring up, I thought your Kimmel guest hosting monologue was good and funny. And you basically treated it like a roast of all the politicians who obviously weren't in the room, but you went at them harder than I think any late night host had before or since, even though the late night hosts are known for doing that. And it just felt like it hit so much harder and brought this really cool energy to a late night monologue that I hadn't seen. So can you just talk a little bit about what it was like to go into that and how you approached it?
I started working with it was really interesting. They asked you to guest host and then they don't really start talking to you until like maybe a week before. And you're like, oh, we only have a week, but that's the way they work there. And some of the best, writers in the game are working on Kimmel. So I had this like, I had just this amazing staff, and I think they pitched to me like you could do a roast, and I go, oh, that's perfect. That's just like a quick thing I can do. I'm kind of known for it. I haven't done it in a while. And I have the best writers in the world. And so it's not like me being like, I have to come up with all these jokes. Like I just got to pick some of the best jokes, and that was, and it was fun to go hard on stuff and kind of feel like, and Kimmel obviously has set the stage for us to be able to pick on people in kind of a vicious way and just kind of like a what the fuck way. So I felt like I was in the right stage to go that hard. And yeah, it's just that's like my zone of safety, is like having just great one-liners that I can bring a personality to and find my voice in saying it and make fun of myself a little bit. Like I think I called myself, like I look like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Mickey Rourke together, or like something, you know, or there was something about, I've made some joke about me looking like, I'm glad to get ahead of some things, because like I feel like they'll come out and I'll be like, I said it first, bitch, on this roast.
Oh, finally, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's proof that the left and the right really can come together. I mean, just look at her eyes. I actually appreciate this woman, because now I know what it would look like if I had a daughter with Mickey Rourke. Marjorie, she's of course anti-abortion, and sadly, so was her mom. Am I going too hard on poor Marjorie? She's had a rough week. I should be nice. She actually, I know, Marjorie, you got swatted twice this week, which is terrifying, and I'm so sorry that happened to you. But let me just say, it really could not have happened to a dumber bitch. So,
it was so fun. And that was the kind of thing I was like, I love late night. It gave me a little taste of like, oh, okay, this is a career that could happen for me someday. And it's always been in the back of my mind, but that experience was really like, oh, it just happens so fast, and then it's done and it's on to the next. And I love that. I love that process.
It made you think you might want to do a show like that someday?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really like interviewing people in such a fast-paced, like, kind of fake way. And not that any of those guys are fake, but it's like, it's kind of like...
Well, they'll even talk about how it's like 7 minutes and
soulless.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, the way Conan
predetermined
talks about,
yeah,
it sucks, and it's that part really stressed me out. And because you want to be personable, you want to listen, but you're worried about the time and the next question. So that part, I was kind of like, ugh. But I think that's only just something I was struggling with, because I haven't done it a ton, and I think it'd just be something that you get better at. Like, you know, they all start off a little shaky in that way. So yeah, I think it would be great, because I travel every weekend for work. I would like to just have a job that's like every day, that's very demanding, which I like to do. I like to work, but that I would stay in the same place and not live out of a bunch of suitcases, which are behind me that I haven't unpacked. Like, I just, yeah. So eventually, if any of those guys ever give it up,
yeah.
But I don't think will.
Was the Daily Show, did anyone have that conversation with you? Because there was a lot of, you know, people trying out and talking about it.
Yeah, I'm not really political. I mean, like, I went political on that roast, but I don't keep up with that stuff, and it doesn't interest me, and it really just depresses me. It's just not
the right platform
where I would naturally
you.
Go. But it's same for like SNL. I'd love to host one day, but and obviously writing for them is like such an honor. But I'm glad that my life didn't go in that way, because I don't think it's the right fit for me. And yeah, there's some things that I'm just like, that's better for other people, even though that would be very cool to say you have done. Yeah.
Well, hosting would be pretty cool.
It would be amazing. And I think it's, you know, that's coming up next for me. I think that's like one of the things that I'll know I've like made it when I do that. And I'm willing
to
after
wait. After Nate Bargatze got it, I feel like it's open season. It's like...
Totally. I think it's so cool.
You know, he's someone who had only done stand-up before he did that, pretty much.
And he killed it. Nate, yeah. Shane. I remember Kumail doing it and being like, oh, whoa, we can do this. Like, there was just certain guys that I'm just like, okay. So I see it on the horizon, and I'm terrified when they do ask, because I will say yes, and then I'll be like, oh, no.
Yeah, wait, that is
like,
really scary.
Doing characters a little scary. Like, being, like, I'm always so in control of, like, I'm me. Like, I don't really act a lot, so it would be an interesting challenge. And yeah.
Well, you're ready for the Taylor Swift sketch, so they should call you for that at least.
I would be... Yeah, that would be... a dream. I would definitely be pitching things that involve her just in any way to work with her. That would be, yeah, that would be the best. That's my in. Okay. That's my new manifest thing that I'm going
to
work on.
Maybe you can do the, you could start with the cameo impression and then move on to host. I don't know. Or go straight
or
to
like
host.
Weekend Update. I do an impression and then she comes in as herself. Oh, like that. Yeah. That's good. Mm, okay.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. You mentioned, you know, that you are 39 and you talk a lot about aging in the new special. You and I are almost the exact same age, and I am turning 40 as we're talking in a week, but will have already happened when this comes out.
We're so the same age.
Yeah. And so I just figured I would bring that up and see, you know, I know you talk a lot about it in the special, but how are you feeling about turning 40? You know, I think you're sort of, to my mind and from my perspective, you're the most successful that you've ever been as a comic and seem to be, as we're talking, you know, going up and up with things like hopefully SNL on the horizon. But how are you feeling about it?
I really am okay about it. I kind of do this thing where I always say I'm the next age. So I've been kind of saying I'm 40.
Yeah, trick yourself,
all year so that I can prepare when it does happen. It's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm kind of always ready for the worst to happen. I hate aging. It's been difficult. You know, there are good days and there are bad days. I'm feeling my stock, you know, kind of sink as, you know, I just can see it coming, you know, like I don't think it's really started to happen yet. But when you get up there and you become less, as I talk about in the special, just less sexually desirable, the industry isn't as excited about you. And I want to keep working. And that's my desire, to stay hot. And, you know, it just is a good life to be considered like a good looking person. And but yeah, I think I'll be OK. I think that it's inevitable that I'm going to figure out how to like myself as I age, because I've realized there's no way around it. It's just going to happen. And it's only, the only way out is through, and you just got to embrace it, and you just got to, but it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a fight to get through it. But for now, I feel like 40 is fucking young. That's the other thing, is like, I know what's ahead. I'm scared about, you know, 60. I'm 40. I'm fine with, I'm in it. It's fine. I've let go of I don't want to look 20 anymore. I really feel that way. I am glad I'm not, but I still also feel very stunted emotionally. I'm not married. I still rent. I don't own a place. I don't have kids. So I don't feel 40 in many ways. So it's, but I think it's cool. Whenever you turn the next decade, you're the youngest of that decade. So I'm like the oldest 30-year-old right now. And so I'm about to be like so young for my 40s. So I'm reframing things.
I like that. Yeah. I'm going to think about it like
that too. You should too.
So now it's time for our final segment called The First Laugh. This is something that you did when you were on before, so I'm going to try to mix it up and ask some different questions. What was that first time that you got up to actually perform stand-up like? What do you remember about it?
I remember everything. I mean, I was battling an eating disorder at the time. I was very anorexic. I like was a bag of bones. Gone away to school my freshman year of college. I'd been hospitalized over the summer for it. I kind of lied to my parents and to doctors so I could even get out of the hospital and go to school. And I kind of just planned on dying because I was just so miserable and didn't know how to eat. And I just didn't know how to even begin to recover. And I had no interest in recovering because that meant eating. And I just couldn't. Like, I don't know what it was. I was on death's door. And that's when I started being... to make friends at school, because I looked so sick, no one would really be friends with me. Everyone was kind of like, ew, that girl's weird. And so I just started being louder and like dialing up my personality. And I didn't even realize I was doing it, but that was the first time I heard from people, you're really funny, you should be a comedian. So I wanted to be an actress for a while. And I thought maybe that was my into the business, but it wasn't, because I just didn't get into theater school. And I was kind of maybe going to try it at school, but I just knew I wasn't passionate about it, even though I did want to perform. So when people told me you should be a comedian, and then my friend found a flyer on campus that said like stand-up comedy show, sign up. And she like literally, it was just like out of a movie. She like ran in my dorm room and like slammed it on my desk. And she was like, you're doing this. And I was like, okay, like that's all I needed, was someone like, I'm going to sign you up for this if you don't sign up. And so I signed up for it. I wrote some jokes. And then I did it, and I did really well. It was the first time I'd ever felt like, oh, I'm good at something. Like, I'd never been, like, naturally good at anything. And I was just like, this was not that hard, and I did better than everyone else. I'm this is it. And so I walked off stage and I instantly called my dad, who had been listening because my friend held the phone for my dad to listen. And I walked off stage and I like cried. I was in the wings of this theater on campus and I cried and I was like, dad, because I was really sick. Like my parents thought I was going to die. Like it was kind of, that's what was going to happen. Like it's a really, anorexia is pretty, it's the most fatal mental illness there is. So I was ready to go. And so it was a really like touching moment of like, I know what I want to do. Like I want to live. And so I mean, I'm not even joking. The next day I called, you know, on campus counseling to be like, who can help me with this eating disorder? I'm ready to try because now I have something that I want to do and that I'm good at. And so, yeah, I remember it very vividly.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time that you felt famous, that you either you got recognized or just felt like you were a famous person?
I guess, God, I wish I knew. I think it's been such a slow build that I think it really has been. It's been so just over the years, a little bit more, but I still don't feel it. I'm never anywhere being like, I wonder if they know it's me. Like I don't walk around thinking I'll ever be recognized. I'm not. Yeah,
you kind of assume that you won't.
Yeah. I literally never assume that anyone's going to know who I am ever. I mean, maybe if I see people like kind of looking at me, but even then I'd be like, they're just like making fun of my sweatshirt or something. Like I'm a 39-year-old woman wearing a Taylor Swift sweatshirt and hat, you know, like I don't ever think they're like, that's Nikki Glaser. So, I think it's probably when I did Conan, I think that, I mean, for me, that was like meeting Conan, being in even the same room as him. Like that's some kind of comedic achievement. And I mean, the biggest comedic achievement I can imagine is that Conan O'Brien knows who I am and like is genuinely laughing at things I'm saying. I think that was like a breakthrough. And then another major one that I just remember, it was like a year and a half ago, Jerry Seinfeld like knew who I was. I met him. I was doing a show in Atlantic City. He was doing another theater and they were like, the people at the casino were like, do you want to meet Jerry? You know, he's doing, and I'm like, I don't want to bother him. Like, no, like I, of course I do. But like, I don't ever want to bother celebrities. And then after my show, they were like, Jerry would like to meet you. And I was like, okay. So I just like scramble and I get all my things and they walk me through the wings and I go to his green room and he greets me and he's like, I love you. You got it. You have it. I follow everything you do. And I go, I literally thought he was doing an impression of what I was going to do for him. Like he was getting ahead of me being like, I love you. And so I literally said to him, are you saying what I was going to say to you? Like I said, I was so, I was so confused because I just had never heard, we had been in the same rooms before and but I think over COVID, he had watched my reality show and stuff. Like he knew, I live in St. Louis. As a side, I said that telling a story. He goes, I know everything about it. And so that was like, I had a friend there to witness it too, thank God, because I would honestly think it was still a dream. And it's one of the things that keeps me going. Like Jerry Seinfeld said that I'm funny. He said that I have it. I have the comedic voice. He kept being like, listen to her voice. Listen to the way she talks. She has it. Like that was so validating. No one can argue with that. I didn't trick him. I might have imposter syndrome, but like he proved that that is false. Like you can't trick Jerry Seinfeld. So I really rely on that memory and my friend's memory of it to get me out of some moments where I think that I'm a fraud. And so that was a big moment.
That is. Yeah. Was Conan your first late night show?
No, actually the Tonight Show was. I did the Tonight Show in 2009 with Jay Leno before he came back, you know, like the original Jay Leno Tonight Show.
It must have been the very end of his run.
Probably was. It was probably like the last year. And time was running out. I had been approved to do his show like a year and a half before that. And I thought I was going to be on the next week after they approved my set. I was like, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be on the Tonight Show. Tell everyone. Wait. Waited a year and a half. And by the time they called, I had given up hope. I had not even thought it was going to happen. And they called me the day of and were like, we had someone drop out. Can you do the show tonight? And it was insane. I was 24 and had no idea what I was getting myself into. And it went really well. I was really glad that I didn't have time to prepare because I just had to like do it.
You couldn't get in your head.
Yeah, I couldn't really get nervous, and it went great. It was so fun, and I thought, you know, that's the moment I've arrived. Like, you know, I did the Tonight Show. I had done Last Comic Standing before, but nothing else. And then, but nothing changed. Literally nothing. A month later, I moved out of LA because I couldn't afford it anymore, yeah, and I didn't want to babysit.
Past the days of the Tonight Show changing your life.
Oh God, so past. It was. I don't even know what I was thinking. Like that, it didn't do anything. But it was. it did give me the confidence. It was a credit, you know, like I could go back to the Midwest and start to headline little rooms here and there because of that credit. But I could not last in LA even with that. It was, you know, and it's still that way.
Looking back, is there something that you've said no to professionally that you now wish you had said yes to?
Yes, Hot Ones. I got asked to do Hot Ones in 2016 to promote my show Not Safe. And it was a show, it was already pretty popular at the time. But I turned it down because I was kind of having a resurgence of an eating disorder that I was like, I'm not going to like eat a bunch of chicken wings. Like that's too many calories. Like I turned it down because I had an eating disorder. So I can't wait to go back and talk to him about that. Yeah,
I feel like you can get that again. I feel like you can get back on there.
I think it'll come back my way. And no one will ever top Conan's, by the way. Like, it's one of the greatest things I've ever watched. Like, I was talking about, people are talking about Taylor Swift's new album, which I'm obsessed with and I can't stop watching. But last week for me, it was Conan's Hot Ones. That was my Tortured Poets. Like, I was talking about it constantly. I was watching it. I was studying it. And yeah, but Hot Ones was one that I was like, you idiot. You turned that down because you didn't want to eat 600 calories or whatever it was. Like, that just shows the insanity of an eating disorder and how it can come back and get me.
It's mostly about the sauce anyway, not the chicken.
So. Yeah, it totally is. And it was
Do they have a vegan option?
They do.
Hot Ones
they offered that to me at the time too. And it was just me being scared to eat on camera. And now I love eating
now
on camera.
You just did last night. Yeah.
Yeah. I go on these cooking shows and they're like, no one ever eats as much as you. And I'm like, oh wait, now you're triggering me. I eat too much. No, but it's that was one thing. But I learned my lesson, and that's why I don't really say no to anything unless it's just a time commitment. Like if I can do it, I like doing things, especially things that I'm scared of. You know, doing Dancing with the Stars was where I learned that. Like I was terrified of it. I didn't want to do it, and then it was as bad as I thought it would be, and I did as bad as I feared I would do.
And no regrets.
No, because I learned that the worst thing can happen. You can get voted off first. You can be humiliated. You can be told that you dance awkwardly, that you're not good, that this was not fun to watch. You weren't good. You can be rejected by ABC, which really Dancing with the Stars is just ABC testing out talent to see if they want to develop with it. That's really a big thing of Dancing with the Stars. Does this person resonate with our audience? Mine was a huge thumb down. They immediately were like, no one likes her. So it was a rejection on so many levels. And I'm in a leotard. Like I'm wearing a bathing suit. Just everything about it was humiliating. I'm alive today. No one gives a shit. No one remembers that happened. It doesn't matter. So that really taught me just like say yes to things, because even the worst thing you'll survive it. It's okay.
Yeah. That was going to be my next question. Is there something you said yes to that you now wish you had said no to, but sounds like maybe not.
I would say, oh, that's a good question. And there are things that I'm just like, why am I doing this? Oh my God. Let me just think for 1 second about that. Something I regret. I guess I don't have one. I guess when, I shouldn't say this, but no, I won't say it. But I regretted doing something. I guess I should I regretted doing something where I made a joke making fun of this kind of podcast that's kind of known as like a dude bro podcast that like is not great to women. And I made some joke about at their offices. I was like, oh, it's great to be here. And it's really cool. Your office is like you guys do like women. Like you have tampons and pads. I weighed in. You had me write my weight on the wall. I just made a joke like that. And he was like, we're going to cut that joke. And I was like, what? Like, make fun of yourself.
Can't take a joke, yeah.
And he literally cut it. So I wouldn't go back on that show, but I don't want to say what it is because they control so much other stuff. And that's the way this business works. You can't speak out the truth because they all fucking control each other. And it's all connected.
We are an hour into this podcast, so it's very possible that no one will hear it.
That's the truth. People don't get to the end of things. That's the funny thing about like doing a stand-up special. You're like, my closer's got to be the best part. And I'm like, so rarely do people make it to the closer. Yeah. Like just
your closer
strong.
Does rule though.
Thank you so much. That was, I mean, I don't even, I can't even, that is something I would never do in a live show ever, ever. Like the only time I did that act out in a live, I never act out things. And the only time I would ever do that is to practice for that. But I just thought I'd, you know, it's funny and it's weird. And it's like, I'm talking about wanting to be in a gangbang, but never being able to do it. And then I literally like mime being in a gangbang. Like there's kind of no difference between what I do and like an actual, except that like, it's not happening to me, but that's the funny thing about my stand-up. is like, I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, I talk about sex in a way that I'm like, if you were blind, this is porn. Like, I'm just like, what if I could never do porn. And then I pretty much do it. So I think that's, yeah, it was bold. It was ambitious. There was a part of me that regretted doing it because I'm like, this is not my style even, but that's kind of fun to take a risk and try something different and try something physical. And it was, and I'm glad I was doing Pilates training for this because I would not have been able to hold that gangbang pose as long as I did. It was insane.
Our final question is there a story or memory from your career that makes you laugh now, but really was not funny when it happened?
Oh, okay. So I had a joke about Caitlyn Jenner on the roast that I was going to do, that I was running around town doing to prepare because Comedy Central had not given me any, like, you can't talk about this. You know, there was no guidelines, but they were kind of saying, hey, maybe don't mention the car accident, you know? But I said, is that from her? And they go, no. And I go, well, until it is, I'm going to do the joke. And they're like, well, we were guessing she wouldn't love it. And I go, well, why don't you ask her? And they're like, we don't want to ask her. And I go, can I ask her? And they said, no.
They're scared of her, yeah.
Yeah. So I just continued doing it. So, but she caught wind that someone was doing these jokes because I was doing it all over Hollywood. So someone got to her, which makes sense. And then she told Comedy Central, if someone does a joke about that, I'll walk off stage. So that's all I needed to hear. And I said, okay, I won't do it. But the joke was, you know, Caitlyn Jenner, what a beautiful woman you killed with your car. It was like that. And so I didn't end up doing it. And I when I met Caitlyn Jenner before the show, because we all meet like right before we go out and they place us like 5 minutes, you have to like kind of mingle and be like, hey, and you're about to like, you know, say the worst things these people have ever heard to their faces. It's very awkward. And I thought, oh my God, does she know I'm the person that made that joke? Like, I didn't even know if she knew. And I felt embarrassed and like kind of, you know, just ashamed that I had said that joke and that she heard about it. So I was kind of sheepishly like, hi, I'm Nikki. Nice to meet you. And she was like, I couldn't tell whether or not she knew it was me, but it maybe sensed a little weirdness, but she could have been just feeling awkward and I was awkward, whatever. But then I'd also heard from a writer friend of mine that at rehearsal, her set was really, really funny and that she was going to have a great set. And so I wanted to like have some sort of moment with her before where I like, you know, and I like to do this for a lot of times when I'm on a show with people who aren't comedians where they're expected to be funny. I like as a comedian, if I think they are really funny and exceptional, I like to like give them a boost of like, hey, you're fucking, you could be a comedian. Like you just chose a different path. You've got this. Like you belong here. Don't think that you aren't. So I like to have a little moment like that. And so I walked up to her. I like chased her down because she was walking really fast. And I was like, hey, Caitlyn. I was like, so nice to meet you. I was like, oh my God, today at rehearsal, my friend said she saw you. She said that you absolutely killed. And then when I said killed, the look on her face was just like, this bitch not only made a joke about me killing a woman, but now she's rubbing it in, like trying to hunt me down so she can say it again to my face. And that was like so, her reaction was kind of like, because I forget that people don't talk like that. Like they don't say killed and destroyed and that's my bit and like this comedian jargon. So that's a moment I look back on like, oh my God, I was trying to do the opposite and ingratiate myself to her. And I looked like I was just being a psychopathic bully to just rub it in even more.
Caitlyn Jenner, I just want to thank you for all you've done for the trans movement in the size 16 stiletto industry. You are such an incredible athlete. People forget just how fast you once ran from your first family to go be on a reality show. Seriously, though, I know being a new mom is hard. But even Casey Anthony knows the current location of her daughter.
And then, yeah, there's been just like so many moments like that where, and the same thing happened on Dancing with the Stars. I was really obviously nervous to be on that show. And Tom Bergeron has this moment on the show where he asks the contestants like just a panel question. He goes to you and he's like, oh, and I went up to him before the show and I said, you know, Tom, I'm so bad at this show. The only thing I'm good at is talking. Can you tell me what you're going to ask so I can have like a funny, you know, like write something? And he said, no, I can't, you know, it's whatever I think of in that moment. And I'm just like, come on, bud. But he didn't give me anything. So I'm on the spot, which is fine. And he asked me, you know, has being a comedian prepared you at all for dancing? And by the way, on Dancing with the Stars, they are very like, Nikki, behave yourself. Don't be dirty. This is ABC. And they're constantly kind of telling me like, you're lucky you're even on here. You're disgusting. You're like, We know what you talk about. Behave yourself. So I was just like, oh, yes, I would never. Like, I'm happy to be here. I was just trying to be so perfect, not a dirty comedian, someone new. This is a new Nikki Glaser that ABC is going to embrace. And he goes, does being a comedian prepare you at all for Dancing with the Stars? And I said, yeah, well, I've had a lot of rough sets. And he goes, whoa. And everyone thought I said sex. Everyone. Which wouldn't even make sense given the context of the question. But everyone. And then I go,
just assume-
No. But they all were just waiting for me to slip up. And they go, whoa. And it's live on TV. And I'm just like, no. That's what I said, sets. Sets isn't like a comedy set. And then to get it back, I go, well, I've had both. And then that was like the nail in the coffin. They were like, she did make the joke. And I was just trying to save a misunderstanding. And then I was voted off the show instantly. And it was probably because I was a bad dancer, but it could have been because I couldn't be trusted. So it's just like fumbles like that that I look back on. I'm like, oh God. And now I can laugh about it.
Those are both examples of people not knowing comedy jargon, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
You in trouble.
Yes. I need to just like talk about it in a general way. And yes, that's exactly it. I've learned from that. But I did destroy this interview. No, I'm just, keep going into it.
Yeah. Well, Nikki, it's been so great to have you here. You know, I would love to, you know, for this interview to somehow make it into your next special.
I think it will.
You know, I don't know. I mean, if you want to help write the headline for this one now, you can. I don't know if anything, you know, is coming to mind.
Yes. It's something about like, is Nikki ready to say the R word? She thinks so. Like something like, yeah. If they're not using it, she get like, I would love an out
Nikki
of context.
Glaser, Nikki Glaser thinks the world is ready for her to use the
yeah,
R word.
The R yeah. word's coming back, says Nikki Glaser.
You did
Glaser.
Say that. You definitely
yeah,
said that.
Yeah, I did say that.
You said that. Let's see, what else did you say? You said that your comedy is basically like porn.
Watch out for black guys.
Watch out for black guys.
I literally did say that.
A lot of suicide material. Yeah, we got a lot to work with here, I think.
Man,
yeah.
Just have fun. You know, think outside the box. You can do it.
Yeah, maybe we'll do like, you know, it'll be like one of those with magazines with like four different versions, four different covers. Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you, Matt. Thank you for watching it and doing all your research and everything. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Thank you so much to Nikki Glaser for coming back on this podcast. And I can't wait to see what she makes of whatever headline ends up running with this episode on thedailybeast.com. Nikki's new HBO special, Someday You'll Die, premieres on HBO this Saturday night, May 11th at 10 p.m. and will stream on Max after that. She is also hosting a show that same night at the Hollywood Palladium as part of Netflix is a Joke Fest. And you can get tickets for that at netflixisajokefest.com. And again, if you're going to be in LA for the Netflix is a Joke Festival, please come check out our live taping with Mae Martin tonight, Wednesday, May 8th. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple and Spotify. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Threads at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram and Threads, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who's coming up next on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.